Leo Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, this week marks 35 years since the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law, but advocates say the fight for equality isn't over. Cuts to Medicaid could threaten vital services for hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers with disabilities. We'll hear from the state's new Developmental Disabilities Commissioner about what's next. We're taking a closer look at the lives of local veterans and the support they can receive in Wayne County from the challenges of returning to civilian life to the programs helping veterans find jobs, education, and a sense of community. We'll speak with Veterans Services Officer Gregory Rector. Plus, Cliff Westfall and David Christian are here to preview their upcoming gig this weekend at Seminary Hill, and so is our own Classical Kit with more on the weekend of chamber music. That's all coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. The Republican-led Senate voted early this morning to take back $9 billion in already approved federal funding for NPR and PBS and for foreign aid. The vote was along party lines. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says public media is essential.
This is a dark day for America, a dark day for rural Americans, a dark day for any American who relies on public broadcasting during floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, and other disasters.
But Senate Majority Leader John Thune says the money is just a small amount of the government's spending.
What we're talking about here is 0.1% of all federal spending. 0.1% of all federal spending. But it's a step in the right direction.
The measure now goes to the House for final passage ahead of tomorrow's deadline. Eswatini says it wants to repatriate the five men recently deported to the Southern African nation from the United States. Michael Koloki has more.
Eswatini's government says the deportation of the five migrants to the country followed high-level discussions with the U.S. government and that the deported migrants are currently being held in correctional facilities. Earlier this week, the Department of Homeland Security said the men are from different countries and have criminal convictions ranging from child rape to murder. The Eswatini government in its statement says, together with the United States, it will collaborate with the International Organization for Migration to facilitate the transit of the men to their countries of origin. Some rights groups have challenged the Trump administration's deportation efforts, arguing migrants are not given due process. For NPR News, I'm Michael Koloki in Nairobi.
The Trump administration has revoked federal funding for California's high-speed bullet train project. That's creating uncertainty about how the state will proceed with its long-delayed promise on the $100 billion project that would shuttle riders between Los Angeles and San Francisco. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported a bigger-than-expected jump in retail sales. NPR's Scott Horsley has more.
Retail sales rose by 0.6% in June after a slump the previous month. That's a bigger rebound than forecasters had expected. A big jump in auto sales helped drive the turnaround. Spending was also up at restaurants, grocery stores, and home improvement centers, while spending at department stores was down. Coca-Cola says it appreciates President Trump's enthusiasm for its formula, but the soft drink maker stopped short of confirming Trump's announcement that Coke would switch to using sugar rather than corn sweetener in its flagship cola. Meanwhile, Pepsi shares opened higher after the company reported better-than-expected quarterly profits. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is up 168 points. The Nasdaq is up 96. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Catholic Church officials say two people were killed in an Israeli strike on Gaza's only Catholic church. Several others, including the parish priest, were injured. The Israeli military says it's aware of the incident and it's investigating. Pope Leo today renewed his call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza in response to the attack. That church sheltered both displaced Christians and Muslims throughout the war. A video version of the Stephen Sondheim musical, Merrily We Roll Along, will hit movie theaters in December. Jeff London reports the Tony Award-winning show, A Hot Ticket on Broadway, will soon be available worldwide.
Merrily We Roll Along was a notorious flop when it first played on Broadway in 1981, running just 16 performances. The story of three lifelong friends from youthful enthusiasm to middle-aged disillusionment is told backwards.
Hey, old friends, how do we stay? Old friends, who?
But the Broadway revival was a palpable hit. Fathom Entertainment will present screenings of the video in December. Director Richard Linklater is working on a movie version starring Ben Platt, Beanie Feldstein, and Paul Mescal, which is being filmed in chronological order and won't wrap until 2039 at the earliest. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
The Labor Department says the number of people filing first-time unemployment claims fell to 221,000, the lowest level in 3 months. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, dedicated to improving the learning experience for America's students by sharing what works in pre-K through 12 education. At edutopia.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. And our summer fund drive continues. We are at 76% of our goal. It's a $55,000 goal we need to meet by tomorrow. And joined in the studio by Mimi, our development manager, for a quick update here. Mimi, it's pacing really well. We're going to make it.
We are going to make it. We've definitely felt the support of the community, I think, especially given the news that's going on right now.
We well woke up to some not great news. The Senate has decided to move forward that rescissions package, which would claw back funding that was previously approved by the GOP-led Congress, I might mention, that will leave us with a budget shortfall of about $170,000. That's 25%, about 25% of our annual income. We're going to figure it out. But first, the first step is we need to meet this goal on our summer fund drive. That was something we previously had planned for, the summer fund drive. And then we thought we were going to get these funds from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the GOP-led Congress that was already appropriated in March, Q4, but now we're going to have to figure that out. But first step, let's get this drive done and get those donations in there, and we'll figure out what we need to do because we know we have the support of our community. Hearing from folks online today, this morning, with great messages, Arthur saying they do so much to help support local businesses. Their future, the future of them, of many, depends on theirs. Thank you so much. David saying now more than ever, exactly. Mary saying critically important to save public radio. Everybody in the community relies on you. You're like a best friend. Mary, thank you so much. That was so nice, Mary. Thank you. And then Cynthia, this is great too. I'm a local artist. I listen every day and I've waited long enough. So Cynthia, one of our longtime listeners, hadn't donated before, donating now, giving what she can. Everybody coming around to help support this vital public service. So again, more than ever, we need your support right now. And a way to help us with that is a challenge that we have. Someone called in a challenge the other day. This is anonymous, but what's their specific message here?
They are calling on the listeners of Ulster County to step up. We've heard from a lot of new donors so far this fund drive. So now, Ulster County, it's your turn. Our generous donor has given us $500, but we'll only get it if we raise $500 from you.
Yeah.
So another $1,000 on the wheel will help us so much in getting towards our goal, but we need to hear from you first.
So specifically challenging the Ulster County folks who might be listening to donate, but anyone can donate, 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. We appreciate your support. We're not going anywhere. We're going to face some challenges, and we're going to do it together with your support, 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. Help us meet this challenge from Anonymous. And Ulster, if you're out there, call. Thank you, Mimi.
Sure thing.
Now, it's the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act since that was signed into law. But advocates say the fight for equality isn't over. Cuts to Medicaid could threaten vital services for hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers with disabilities. Yesterday in Albany, a coalition of New York state agencies celebrated that anniversary of the ADA, that landmark federal civil rights law that prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities in many aspects of life. We are now going to hear from the director, or the newly confirmed New York State Office for People with Developmental Disabilities Commissioner Willow Baer. She spoke to Chantal Destra from the New York Public News Network about
the 35th anniversary of the ADA and about the challenges and goals for her office.
Thank you so much for joining us here today, Commissioner.
Thanks so much for your interest and for the invitation.
Yeah. So as the newly confirmed commissioner for the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities in the state, what can you tell us about your journey to becoming commissioner and your plan for the office?
My journey to becoming commissioner was very unexpected. I am a recovering attorney, so I'm an attorney by trade. I served as counsel to the agency for a number of years, as well as assistant counsel to Governor Kathy Hochul for two different terms. Came back to the agency into the operational role about a year and a half ago, and the then commissioner decided that she was going to sort of retire, move on, focus on her home life and family, and I had the unexpected opportunity to step up into this role, and it has just been the honor of a lifetime. It's been incredible so far.
Yeah, and what are your plans for the office?
I want New York State to remain sort of a leader in the disability services world. I'm so proud of the work that we've done, but as a system, we are at like a midlife crisis. We're a relatively new system throughout the country in terms of having people with disabilities really community integrated, getting jobs, living their best life in the community. And I am really excited to move into the future, into the next wave of what the service system can look like to make sure people really are living the same life that anyone else has access to. So I'm really proud to be at the sort of helm of the next wave of that transformation.
And how do you think your tenure as commissioner will be different or unique to the tenures of those before you?
Well, that's a great question. I think everyone is different. Everyone brings a little something different. I really come to the system from the role of an advocate and as a family member. So I'm the family member of someone with a developmental disability served in the system. And so my focus right out of the gate was to make sure that we had family stakeholders and self-advocates at the table to help us develop policies and to really understand the customer experience of the service system. And so I think that sort of vision as an advocate is what I build into everything I do and hope to be sort of the lasting legacy of my leadership.
And July marks the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. What does that milestone mean to you and your office?
It is, and thank you for highlighting it. It means everything. I was in Austria not that long ago at a conference filled with people that were disability advocates from all different countries all around the world. And the United States really is still the North Star in terms of disability access. And it's because of things like the ADA, which really we only have here. Many other countries don't even have an ADA yet. We're really excited to be celebrating that event in the plaza, and to be focusing on what we have done in this state over the last 35 years. It is everything to the disability rights community and to our agency in particular. We want people with developmental disabilities to have access to anything you or I would have access to. And the ADA is really at the heart of everything.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about the legacy of the Willowbrook State School. Now, we know this was a state-owned facility that would house children with developmental disabilities. It was closed down after several reports of just neglect and deplorable conditions for the kids in the school. What does the legacy of Willowbrook mean to you, and how does that sort of shape the way that you're going to approach leadership?
The legacy of Willowbrook is hard for New York because it immediately conjures this image for anyone. You hear the words Willowbrook, you remember the documentary, you remember those images and those sounds, right? And it was awful. But the closing of Willowbrook really sparked an international movement, and that started here in New York, right? In terms of deinstitutionalizing people, moving them out of those horrible conditions, moving people out into community residences, taking people out to volunteer, right? And so that marked really the start of everything that my agency does and is such a rich history, but such a dark history, right? We, this year and this year's enacted budget, actually have an incredible investment from the governor and the legislature to build a Willowbrook Center for Learning in Staten Island, where we're renovating the last building left on that state campus that needs that renovation, it's still sort of stuck in time. It looks the same as it did then, and it's a terrible reminder when people drive past it. So we have this incredible investment to update the entire campus, to really make some modernizations, and in that building in particular, to build a Willowbrook Center for Learning where we can bring artifacts and timelines and really honor that history in a positive way and really highlight how much growth has happened since then.
And if someone wanted to report neglect for a person with developmental disabilities today, is that something they could do with your office, or would it be another state agency like the Inspector General's office?
So the New York State Justice Center was launched in 2013, and all allegations of abuse, neglect, not just for my system, but for other systems that serve vulnerable populations in New York, the New York State Justice Center houses sort of that reporting process. Reports can be made to us directly. We make reports to the Justice Center when we need to, but they sort of maintain that process to make sure that everything is reported and reviewed from a neutral third party.
And when it comes to the work of your office, is there any overlap with the Council for Developmental Disabilities?
Absolutely. So our partners at the Council really oversee the grant process. They have federal funding. They're in charge of the federal funding component of the Developmental Disability Service System, and they review grants and initiatives. And so we really work in partnership with them. They are their own agency. They have their own director. She does incredible work and brings a wealth of experience to this field. But they are incredible partners in terms of sharing their research, sharing their resources. We talk all the time about what my priorities are and how they can be of assistance and vice versa. So they're an incredible partner here in New York.
And you mentioned federal funding and federal policy, so I wanted to get into President Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. Do you see that federal policy having any impact on the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no way it couldn't. Mm-hmm. So we know that the impact of that bill will look like almost $14 billion in Medicaid cuts to New York State. So that is largely in health and hospital systems, but you can't cut $14 billion of healthcare in New York State and not impact people with disabilities who also rely on Medicaid for those health services. People with developmental disabilities in particular already have a very hard time finding medical providers, dental providers, appointment times, offices that are wheelchair accessible, for example. Our population has a hard time accessing healthcare, and this will make it 100 times harder for them. We rely on $7 billion of Medicaid just to serve people with developmental disabilities in New York alone. So when you're looking at $14 billion overall being cut out of the Medicaid budget, it will absolutely impact everyone that we work to serve, as well as all of the people that work really hard to support people in the system who are overall a low-income workforce, right? So it'll absolutely have devastating impacts across the state.
And when it comes to state funding, do you think the state is giving you enough in financial resources to support the work that you're doing?
So under this governor, we have had incredible investments over the last 4 years. Governor Hochul's invested $4 billion in new funding just to our service system in the last 4 years by way of cost of living adjustments and workforce bonuses. And the $850 million investment we made recently to our nonprofit provider system. So we have been doing incredibly well in the last few years in my system, really catching up to the cost of doing business and making really intentional investments in places where historically have been underinvested. That being said, with a $14 billion cut to Medicaid coming up, you know, the New York State, no matter how good a financial state we're in, is never going to be able to make up that loss of funding.
And lastly, what are some of your long-term goals for the office? How are you hoping that the state will continue to support people with developmental disabilities in the years to come?
I think we're really on a great track. We have a really robust strategic plan that we've been working on over the last few years that really set out short-term and long-term goals for the agency. You know, like I said, I've been really intentional about involving self-advocates and family advocates and developing better relationships with our nonprofit providers to make sure that they feel very supported and that the direct support staff that work really hard every day across the state to support people feel supported and have the the resources to do the job they need to do. So I'm very excited to just continue that work, driving forward our strategic plan, making sure people have what they need to really live integrated lives and to increase the number of people employed. That's an area in New York State where we've historically not done a great job of making sure people with disabilities have access to meaningful employment. So we're very focused on driving that forward this year as well.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us today, Commissioner.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And we were speaking with Willow Bear, Commissioner of the New York State Office for People with Developmental Disabilities.
And thanks to Chantel Destra of the New York Public News Network for that report. It's our summer fun drive, and we have a challenge from Anonymous in Ulster County, challenging folks specifically in Ulster County to donate. We have a donation to report, though, Anonymous, not from Ulster, so it just goes to show you that anyone can donate. 845-482-4141, Anonymous from Swan Lake, giving their donation, and now we only have $400 to go on that challenge. So help us out, 845-482-4141, or go to wjffradio.org. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we're taking a closer look at the lives of local veterans and the support they receive in Wayne County. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
I'm Brooke Gladstone from On the Media, and as you can deduce from the name of the show, we track the evolving media, the right and the wrong of it, across myriad platforms. But the truth is, the best thing about it, and I'm talking here about the fact-based media, the independent media, is that it's here at all. Over the 3 decades I've been watching, there have been countless bombardments and forays and brawls, but I've never seen it attacked with such focus and ferocity as now. Especially our own little corner of it, public media, your media, we hope. You know, you could stand up for public media right here at home. Start a monthly gift or add to your existing one. Here's how you do it.
Give now at WJFFradio.org. Protect public media and stand with Radio Catskill. WJFFradio.org. Thank you so much.
Stand with us. Your financial support is essential in providing this vital service to our community, so we can tell you the stories of folks in our community and let you know what's going on and connect you to all of the great folks that are doing stuff locally, as well as the cultural programming and the national and global news you rely on every day. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We have a $500 challenge from Anonymous in Ulster County, challenging specifically Ulster County listeners to donate. Anyone can, though. 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. We're 76% of the way toward our fund drive goal. And we could use your support, especially during this challenge, because that's going to just move that wheel of progress that much further. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And turning now to some great work that's going on for veterans in our community, we're joined by Frank Araujo, Director of and Veterans Service Officer for Wayne County Veterans Affairs. Frank, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Talk a little bit about the services you provide in your office for veterans in our area, and roughly how many veterans live in our community.
Absolutely. So first, let me say that this office doesn't work for the VA. We work with the VA. We are federally accredited, and I work for the county. And in Wayne County, there are roughly 3,700 veterans. And there's probably about less than 1,000 of them that are being served by this office. Hmm. And that's part of my mission here, is to expand that service.
What is the challenge about getting more people served by your office? What are some of those challenges that you face, and then also that local veterans face, that maybe the general public might not be aware of? I will say that when you said 3,700, that to me is a surprisingly large number for a county that's relatively rural. That's a significant number of folks.
Certainly, and you know, you kind of hit it when you said rural, and that's part of the challenge, you know, for this office. So we're in Honesdale, you know, basically like the center of Wayne County, and the surrounding towns and townships, you know, as I said, they're rural. It's more challenging for folks to come out to Honesdale for just for this, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they'll make their way to come shopping at one of the bigger markets we have here and then maybe find their way here. But part of that would be for them to know about the office. And for a long time, there wasn't any signage. We recently put a new sign, and that's gotten some attention as well. So some veterans have found their way into this office via the sign.
Simple steps like that, being more visible with a sign like that. What are some other things you're doing to get local veterans into your office to give them the support that they need?
Well, we've created a Facebook, and you can find that link on the county homepage and then find your way to the VA portion of the homepage. I've been doing outreach with a variety of just organizations. You know, I've been meeting with the veteran organizations such as the VFWs and the American Legions. And in addition to that, I've been meeting with other organizations such as like Camp Freedom or Vets for Vets and even non-veteran organizations locally here in Honesdale or in the community, such as like the senior centers, the Workforce Alliance, and so forth.
What support is there for vets transitioning to civilian life, especially when it comes to jobs or education?
Well, I would say some of the challenges are, you know, maybe the transition or the relatable skills that the veterans, you know, kind of hold dear, and maybe they don't have a full understanding of how their skill set transfers. And, you know, if we do have certain organizations that we can help them work through those challenges and help them understand how their jobs, military jobs, do translate into civilian service or civilian work.
Are there local businesses or programs actively helping veterans in Wayne County?
As far as employment goes?
Yeah, and other job support.
Well, I think in general, any organization that can be fortunate enough to get their hands on a veteran is already helping. You know, you get a veteran that comes, you know, out of active service, you know, you have their tangible skills, their skill set, you know, such as whatever it is, their MOS or their Air Force specialty skill or whatever their primary duty was. And so they come with that skill set. However, they come with an intangible skill that, you know, such as honor, duty, sacrifice, things that, you know, you just can't measure on paper. So any organization that's lucky enough to get their hands on a veteran, you know, is ready to have a foot forward.
And what is it you want folks to know that are listening, whether they're a veteran or not, about your office and you know, events, initiatives coming up that people should know about or participate in?
Well, primarily this office, you know, like I mentioned earlier, will help navigate through the VA system itself. You know, we have county benefits, state benefits, and federal benefits that I can help them walk through, you know, from simple things as far as like trying to retrieve their DD-214s. Maybe they want to do a real estate tax exemption for certain qualified veterans. You know, you can get hunting and fishing licenses here as well. And then, of course, you know, helping them get their compensation and pensions for, you know, ailments received during service. We help them direct them for their medical programs, life insurance, burial benefits. And that's the primary responsibility. But also this office will serves as a hub. Since I, you know, do a lot of networking and outreach here in the community, a veteran comes to me and says, hey, you know, Frank, I have this issue or concern. Does the veteran or does the VA have a program for that? You know, I'll look, and then if not, then I say no, but you know, I know a person or an organization that can help you in that area.
And more folks can get more information at waynecountypa.gov on your Veterans Affairs page. That's Frank Araujo, the Director and Veterans Service Officer of Wayne County's Veterans Affairs Office. Thank you so much for the work you're doing for our vets and helping them get through these transitions and supporting them, and for all the great work you're doing there. Thank you.
Absolutely. Can I have to say one more thing?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
So I just want to say we are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. We're on the corner of Court Street and 10th Street on the same side of the block as the courthouse. And I invite anyone to come on in and have some coffee and chat and learn about what the Veterans Affairs Office has to offer.
And they can find you with your new sign, too. Thanks. Thanks, Frank. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, the music of David Christian and Cliff Westfall. It's Radio Chatskill.
When I sit down for an interview, I'm thinking about you. I'm Mary Louise Kelly from NPR. Not every day, but on the best ones, journalists get to ask people in power questions and hold them to account. There is a reason that freedom of the press is enshrined in the Constitution. At home and abroad, leaders make choices that affect your life. Their impulses and decisions need to be examined in as thoughtful and rigorous an interview as possible. Now, journalists don't do this work to score political points. We do it in the service of asking tough questions on your behalf so you and the world can hear the answers, or lack thereof. That is both a privilege and a responsibility. When you donate to this NPR station, you support journalism that does not back down. Here is how to give and how to help public radio hold powerful people to account.
Donate now at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
You can also call us at 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. We have a challenge from Anonymous in Ulster County, challenging Ulster County residents to step up and make a donation specifically. You don't have to be from Ulster County, though, if you don't reside there. It's okay. You can still donate. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. We heard from Anonymous, and we just heard from our own Patricio Rapayo right there. I'm looking at him through the window and donating online as well. Thank you. Also, does not live in Ulster County. 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. $350 to go now on that $500 generous challenge from Anonymous there. And no matter where you live and no matter how you listen to us, whether it's on air, online, on your smartphone or smart speaker, we need your help now. This essential service is in danger of losing some funding. You heard probably that there's a defunding matter going through Congress right now. We expect that later this evening the House will vote and then formally approve those cuts to NPR, PBS, and those foreign aid programs. So that's going to be about a 25% hit to our budget. So we'll have to figure that out. The first thing we need to figure out and the first thing we need to do together, meet this challenge for our summer fund drive. $55,000 we need to raise by tomorrow. We are at 76% of that goal. You can help us. Stand with us with your support. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Patricio, I'm going to read your quote. Now more than ever, public radio needs our support. We're incredibly fortunate to have a station like Radio Catskill right here. I'm so proud of everyone on our team who works hard every day to bring you the best programming possible. We're still here. And we're not going anywhere. You're absolutely right. And we're very grateful for you and all the great work that you do, Patricio, as well as everybody on this team. And again, we're not going anywhere. We're just going to be having some more challenges that we're going to figure out together. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And speaking of together, this weekend, two acclaimed singer-songwriters, Cliff Westfall and Milton, are joined by some friends taking the stage at Seminary Hill. Cliff is here with one of those friends, David Christian, who's one of our friends as well. Cliff is too. You might also know David as the host of Connect the Dots here on Radio Catskill, which you can hear later tonight at 9. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
Good
well,
thanks for being
How
here.
You doing?
What can fans expect from your live show with Milton this weekend, Cliff?
Well, we are going to be sharing a band of what I think I can fairly say are hot shots. So David Christian being one of them. David, as you may or may not know out there in Radio Land, is a pretty renowned drummer. And we'll have Jeremy Chatsky on bass. He's played with all kinds of people you've heard of, like Bruce Springsteen and Steve Earle and all kinds. Anyway, Jeremy's another local hotshot. Julia Joseph is a tremendous singer. She recently moved to the Hancock area, so she's going to be part of it. And we've got a guitar player named Martin Kirtan, and he's a real gunslinger from the UK originally, but now lives in the city. So we're going to have a really good band, I think.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to just make the suggestion, just call them the Hot Shots. I feel like that's you just coined that phrase right here. David, you've worked with some big artists too, Karen O, Danger Mouse. How'd you get involved with this project with Cliff and Milton? I mean, I know you're out there in the community and playing, but is it just as casual as like, hey, man, I got a gig this weekend, you want to join?
That's kind of how it started. Yeah, it's through a mutual friend of ours that I who now lives on the West Coast, but I played with him, and Cliff's happened to see this guy play guitar and asked him to sit in on a gig with him, and the next thing I knew is he was putting a band together for Cliff. And but that was about what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So we've Cliff and I have been playing together
You've
for
been
a long time
around
now.
For a while.
Yeah.
This is going to be at the Seminary Hill Tasting Room on Saturday, and you guys have played in large venues and smaller venues. How do you approach like a more intimate venue like this, especially as a drummer?
Yeah, you have to play to the room. So I might be using some brushes, or but if you get enough people in there, then you can kind of bring the volume back up a little bit, you know. So yeah, we'll be there'll be six of us up there, so we'll definitely be filling the room, but. Yeah, you always play to the room, you know, not try to make it too hard for anybody to talk or anything. You know?
Yeah, Cliff, what do you personally enjoy about like these more intimate venues and playing live versus like a studio environment as well?
Oh, live shows are really why anybody who's in it, if you don't love doing live shows, you shouldn't be doing it at all, honestly, because it's a blast. It's, you know, that's the reason I got into it in the first place, was that I've always loved live music and I love playing it, and I do really like, the more intimate shows, because you get a lot of feedback. You can really feel it from the crowd, that when people are, you know, when people hear and respond to, the places you want them to respond, you can really feel that vibe, and it's always a blast. So,
what do you guys have on deck for Saturday night? And is there anything in particular you're most excited about playing for the room?
Well, I've got a bunch of new songs they're not brand new, but they're unreleased. And if you don't mind me sharing a little news,
yes,
breaking news,
breaking news.
I have a plan finally in place to record a new album.
Oh, great!
Yeah, we're going to record in Asheville, North Carolina. David will be a part of that, so we're going to do that in late September. But cool. A lot of the stuff that we'll be playing on Saturday is stuff that will be on that new album.
That's exciting. I think that for folks who know you and David and your music, folks have been looking for a new album. I mean, they love you and love hearing both of you play throughout. You guys are, stalwarts in the community. But this is exciting. Congratulations on that. That's
Thank
awesome.
Thank you very much.
And so what is that process like? You'll go down to Asheville, you'll record over the course of a few days or however long that takes. And then when would we expect to see that album out in daylight?
Well, that's an open question, but the general process is, yes, we'll go down there. We'll have the band together for about 5 days, and then, they'll all come back north, and I will scoot sideways and go. The producer I'm working with is actually based in Nashville, Tennessee. We just wanted to be in a remote location.
That's what I was going to ask you. Why Asheville?
There's a studio there that he particularly loves, and I've never been there, but he has recorded there multiple times and thinks it's great. And it's a place where the band can stay together for a week at the same, we're all going to kind of live together and live and breathe that record for a week.
Yeah.
And then when that process is done, when we have the stuff recorded, the band will go home. I'll go with the producer to Nashville, and we will do the mixing and possibly add some, if there's some instrument that wasn't live at the studio that we want to overdub, we'll do that. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but probably a little bit.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be something exciting about going to a location that you haven't been to before, or living with the group of people for that period, focused on this project, but also in this other environment that you're also sort of discovering as well. There's something cool about the creativity process that gets sparked there, I guess.
For sure, yeah. I've done sessions before where you say it's in Brooklyn and I used to live there, and I would go to the studio. You come back at night, you go back in the morning, but it resets. So it's, kind of lose
you're
that.
You're back to your life. You're not regular every day.
Inundated in the music. And then, but in this kind of situation, it kind of keeps growing, and the musically it gets tighter and it kind of becomes its own thing. You hear a lot of stories about classic records where a band decamped out to the country in England or wherever. Right. And this is maybe our little southern version of that, I'd say.
Yeah, Asheville's a great town and very creative, and it sounds like it'll be a blast for you guys. That's cool. Anything else you want to share about Saturday's performance? Any other surprises?
I would just say, so Milton, Cliff, and Julia will all be singing lead. And so one of the fun things is sort of how it kind of spills over into each other. So Milton and Julia will be singing on Cliff songs and, you know, all the different permutations of that. So it is a sort of a unique collaborative night of seeing, seeing this band and these singers, you know, performing together, not one set, it'll
right.
all kind of
like
blend
it's all,
together.
It's like a kind of a jam session there.
Yeah. And it's, 7 to 9 PM up at Seminary Hill. And there you can make reservations, on their website, through Resy.
SeminaryHill.co. I should have asked you a little earlier too. Milton's not someone I'm familiar with. Can you let folks know about Milton's music?
Milton is, number one, he's just very good. But he's kind of all over the map stylistically, I would say. You know, people have asked me that before, like, what style is he? It's like, well, rock and roll, country, blues, classic rock, everything
you can think of. Yeah, he's kind of like a musical encyclopedia. He knows so many songs and has no problem remembering a million lyrics. But it's also like, you know, he kind of digs deep. It's not really obvious. You know, he's a great songwriter. So we'll be playing a lot of his songs, but he also chooses really interesting covers that are not super obvious or played a million times. It's always, you always have to dig a little deep to prepare for playing with him, you know.
All right. So it's Cliff Westfall, Milton, and friends, including David Christian, one of the friends, or as we've now dubbed them, the Hot Shots. That's Saturday, July 19th at 6 at Seminary Hill here.
No, it's 7.
Oh, sorry. The website says something
it?
Different. Yeah. Well, it's okay.
Doors at 6, show at 7.
Doors at 6, shows at 7. That's, okay. I think, what it is.
I apologize.
There you go. Come on in. Taste something. Drink something. Yeah. Then you go. SeminaryHill.co has more information and ticket information there. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Have a great show.
Thanks
so much.
And congratulations on the new album recording thing coming up.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break and come back with more about the weekend of chamber music underway this week. It's Radio Chatskill.
Hello, I'm Michelle Martin. How's the newspaper where you live? Thin? Getting thinner? Publishing a few days a week, if at all? You're not alone. Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat.
It will sell off more of its daily newspapers.
The largest news organization is shrinking.
It's laid off nearly a quarter of its newsroom.
And that makes it harder to keep up with our elected officials and what they're doing. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part by keeping NPR and the station strong with a donation today. And we thank you.
Your gift keeps local news, culture, and NPR funded and freely available to the entire community. Give what you can to keep it going. It's so important right now. Donate at wjffradio.org.
You can also donate by calling us at 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. We have a challenge from Anonymous in Ulster County, a $500 challenge. We heard from Anonymous in Swan Lake. We heard from our own Patricio. Now we're hearing from Sheila in Honesdale. Thank you, Sheila. Also hearing from Anonymous in Little Neck, New York. Thank you so much for your support. That means now we have knocked that $500 challenge we need to get from listeners like you to just $150. Look at that. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Make that donation. Help us get that much closer. Oh, look, Rick, breaking news coming in online. Colleen, thank you so much. Now we're down to $100 on that challenge. 845-482-4141. Let's do that before the end of Radio Chatskill. You're listening to Radio Chatskill, and I'm Tim Bruno. I'm joined in the studio by Mr. Andrew Wagner of the Weekend of Chamber Music, and back again, our own classical kit. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, Tim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I guess we're well.
We're doing it. And we're hanging
in
there.
We've all been better.
We've all been a little bit better. We heard some not so great news this morning from the folks in the Senate. It's now back at the House. That rescission package going to the House to vote on, and looks like it will pass. And that means we'll have to face a 25% loss in federal funding from our budget, or 25 5% loss in funding that comes from the federal government. Listener support is the main way that we get your support through your listener support at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We're going to make it. We're going to do well with the support of listeners just like you. Kit and Andy are here to talk about, of course, the weekend of chamber music, which is underway.
It is.
How's it going?
It's going great. Yeah, we've been rehearsing all week, rehearsing and eating, basically.
Perfect, perfect. Tell us.
And so tonight, things kick off with Music Talk with Augusta Reed Thomas, who is a composer I have been a huge fan of for a bunch of years. You know, she's one of these people that just has such incredible breadth. I mean, I don't know if there's an instrument she hasn't composed for. You know, I mean, she does these orchestral works and chamber works
and opera.
Opera, you know, works with Third Coast Percussion, which is one of my favorite groups in the whole world. And so having her come, have some of the musicians that are with you this year had experience with her work in the past? Because I believe one of the violinists maybe does.
Yeah, well, Emma Frucht, who's new to us this year, wonderful violinist. She has worked with Gusty several times. And the piece that I asked Emma to play tonight, which is a solo work called Sun Plates, Gusty had sent to Emma a few months ago, just saying, you know, I thought you might want to check this out. And then just completely by coincidence, I asked her to play it. So, Emma's worked with Gusty several times, and everybody on this year's roster, of course, knows her and knows her music because she's one of the most important composers of her generation, our generation. She's just a little bit younger than I am. But, she's a major figure, but she's also an incredibly gracious, lovely person. And I think the audience tonight will find her hugely approachable, easy to talk to, easy to ask questions of. She loves this kind of thing. She's one of the few people, I was going to say one of the few people in our field, but I think maybe one of the few people, period, who would much rather talk on the phone than communicate via email. So that if you email Gusty about something, within a few minutes your phone will ring, and then you'll have a long discussion. That's just the way she is.
Well, her communication is the thing that I became aware of in her having worked with Emma Frucht. Because, Tim, this is really unusual. This is a composer who will do a drawing, not just musical notation, but she'll create what looks like a work of art that includes written notes about how things should be played, but also like doodles, drawings in different colors that convey the emotions throughout the piece and how they change and the dynamics. And I saw an image of one for a piece that I believe you're going to have on the program maybe next week. The Tufts Serenade.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I mean, I've never seen anything like that. And, you know, I wondered because she was born in New York City, but she also is so associated with Chicago. So she's in a milieu where all the arts are so vibrant. And a bunch of her compositions relate to paintings and drawings by artists that have inspired her. And then she does her own drawings to kind of communicate with musicians. And also is talked about that she dances when she composes sometimes. And the first piece of hers I heard, when I looked it up on her website and it described, you know, it always say like two violins, one oboe, whatever for each piece. And it says, perform with dancers if possible. So, and that's on a lot of her works, you know, and I don't know if she worked just with specific choreographers or if that's just something that interests her.
Well, it's definitely something that interests her, and it's, I think that for composers of our generation, a big challenge was finding a connection with lived experience that allowed us to take this music, which in the 1950s and 1960s to many people had seemed highly abstract, and to make it physical and to experience it as something physical. And in the old days, composers had lots of reference points for writing music. They had opera, they had song, they had dance, they had literature. Schumann, you know, essentially taught composition to the extent that he taught at all by having people read. And mm-hmm. so you often wouldn't talk about music at all. You'd talk about literature and then take that as an essence that you would rethink musically. But in the 20th century, that really fell away in large part for lots of reasons that we won't get into now. But I think Gusty is one of the most successful composers in finding her own way back from this highly abstract art into something that feels physical.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of her music has a really strong dance energy to it. And one thing that I think is very cool about it is that, again, for people our age, there was kind of a choice back in the 80s. Am I going to pursue what we used to call modern music, or am I going to pursue something that's based much more in pop music? And that pop music path became the dominant path through really well after 2010. But Gusty stuck with the modern music path. She's part of what we're this year calling the great tradition. And writing for orchestra and opera and working with major figures like Daniel Barenboim and Mstislav Rostropovich. And but what she did, and what a lot of us, I think, tried to do, was to take the exact same materials that in the 1950s had felt very, very modern and abstract and to many people very ugly, and to transform them into something dynamic and beautiful and enchanting. And in many cases, it's the exact same materials, but the rhythm is hugely important, this dance motion that you're talking about. And then also a sense of harmony that is closer to what most people, I think, experience as harmonically beautiful. So it's still modern music. It's modernist. But it's beautiful, engaging, it's vibrant, it pulses. It has, you know, it has the beat of life in it.
Well, tonight at Catskill Art Space, you'll be talking with Gusty. I can't get used to calling her that. so that's a great opportunity to, you know, to hear from her and also from some of the musicians. But coming up on the weekend, you have a really interesting program. You've got an Argentinian composer. You've got Aaron Copland. You've got Carlos Chavez, Mexican composer. And Copland and Gina Stera and Chavez all were kind of contemporaries at, you know, the time they were composing. So you've got works from the 40s and the late 30s. And then you've got a piece by Augusta Reed Thomas, and then Haydn. And so I'm just curious about how that all came together and that program.
It's a great question. I think what they all have in common, aside from all being great composers, is this dynamism that we were just talking about. Copland, Chavez, Gina Stera, were all in their time engaged in the same work that Gusty and others have been doing in our time, which is invigorating modern concert music with a sense of rhythmic propulsion and a whole context for the music that comes as much from folk music as it does from classical tradition. And then along comes Gusty with her work, as you pointed out, based in visual art called Clay Musings. So it's based on the paintings of Paul Klee. And then finishing with Haydn with one of his most masterful, if you can say that about Haydn, because they're all masterful, string quartets, in which in the last movement, he's working with some of the exact same rhythmic figures as Gina Stera is in his quartet.
Oh, okay.
And one thing that I said in the program note is you can almost imagine it's as if Haydn suddenly showed up in a production of West Side Story singing America. And with Haydn, the source, most likely, is not Central and South American folk music.
Right.
The source is Haydn's own rhythmic imagination, but it yields some of the same shapes and some of the same rhythmic energy. And it's really fun to hear the pieces on the same program.
Well, you're doing something else this year that's a little bit different. You're going to have Cass Kids on Sunday at 11.
Yeah.
And so that sounds like fun. I mean, you describe it as music conversation, demonstration, and general kid-friendly goofing around. And so this sounds really intriguing.
I think it's just going to be a blast. We're just going to go and play. We'll improvise some. We'll play some short classical pieces. We'll, you know, talk a little bit as much as anybody wants us to talk. And, you know, it's going to be a very... I think a very low key and, you know, come as you are kind of affair.
And then tomorrow you've got a rehearsal, an open rehearsal as well.
That's right.
And that's at the Arnold House.
That's at the Arnold House. Yeah. First
time.
That's great. Yeah. It's fabulous. We've partnered with them a lot in the past, but this is the first time we've done a major season event there.
Mm.
And we're super excited about that. I mean, who doesn't love the Arnold House?
And who doesn't love Weekend of Chamber Music? The big Weekend of Chamber Music event starts tonight at 7:30. Music Talks featuring an evening with Augusta Reed Thomas at Catskill Art Space. And your program continues through July 26th. So always great to have the Weekend of Chamber Music starting up. You know we're in the height of summer when that happens. So Andrew Wagner, thank you so much.
Thank you. Always great to be here. And now call and pledge and do it now.
Thank you. I don't have to prompt you. I love that about you as a guest. Thank you for coming in. Kit, classical Kit.
And I'll give the phone number, 845-482-4141.
Thank you both so much. And we have $100 left on a $500 challenge that we got from Anonymous in Ulster County, challenging Ulster County listeners specifically to donate. And we can also thank folks who are not in Ulster County for wherever you're listening, whether it's on air, online, on your smartphone or smart speaker. Support us right now. It's more critical than ever as we are facing some headwinds. But what we're going to do first is meet our goal for our summer fund drive. We need to meet that by tomorrow. We're at 76% of the way there. And you can help us with your donation at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. And no matter what you've heard in the news today, I want to assure you this station's going to be here for you. We've been here for 35 years, and we're going to continue doing that. And the way we've been able to do that is through the support of listeners just like you. 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. Support us now. Help us stay strong. Help us stay healthy. Help us stay local. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
I'm Brooke Gladstone from On the Media. And as you can deduce from the name of the show, we track the evolving media, the right and the wrong of it, across myriad platforms. But the truth is, the best thing about it, and I'm talking here about the fact-based media, the independent media, is that it's here at all. Over the 3 decades I've been watching, there have been countless bombardments and forays and brawls, but I've never seen it attacked with such focus and ferocity as now. Especially our own little corner of it, public media. Your media, we hope. You know, you could stand up for public media right here at home. Start a monthly gift or add to your existing one. Here's how you do it.
Give now at WJFFradio.org. Protect public media and stand with Radio Catskill. WJFFradio.org. Thank you so much.
You can also call us at 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. Support us now as we close out our summer fund drive. We have $100 left on a $500 challenge. We're hoping to hear from you. We're hoping to do that before 11 o'clock. 45 seconds. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. You're listening to WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. It's Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. According to the National Weather Service, the temperature a little cooler today, a high 84, and considerable cloudiness, a stray shower or a thunderstorm possible. Tonight's low around 61, partly cloudy after midnight. Partly cloudy skies continue through tomorrow and a high of 76 and a little less humid for Friday. Saturday, it looks like partly cloudy and 80. Sunday, some showers possible in the forecast as well with a high of 78. On Point is coming up next. One of the shows we're able to bring you thanks to your support. Donate now at 845-482-4141 or WJFF.